Welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the podcast where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I am one of your hosts, Allison with an I, joined, as always, today by my co-host, Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Patrick.
Hello.
This week was my pick that I picked for a couple of different reasons. The 2005 White Noise, starring Michael Keaton as Jonathan Rivers, a man whose wife, Anna, goes missing under mysterious circumstances. Shortly after Anna disappears, Jonathan is contacted by a man named Raymond Price, who has become an expert on electric voice phenomena since the death of his son. Raymond tells Jonathan that Anna is dead, but he can communicate with her spirit via EVP. When Anna is finally found dead by drowning, Jonathan overcomes his initial skepticism and begins to work with Raymond to communicate with Anna's spirit and find out what led to her death. When I picked this movie, we talked about how Allison with a Y and I had seen this, like, when it came out, like, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Patrick, you had not seen it yet.
I had not. I was, let's see, how old was I then? I was 17. So, yeah, I was just on the verge of breaking out of being a bubble boy at that point. So this was entirely off my radar.
Oh, interesting.
But this was a big hit, right? People were talking about this. It made crazy money at the box office. I think it was like a $10 million budget, and it made $90 million. So this was a huge hit for the studio, especially that's for a movie crazy. That came out in January, because usually that's like boneyard, like graveyard, where you dump your worst shit. And it was a huge hit for a January movie.
So I feel like when this movie came out, it was 4 years after Mothman Prophecies and 3 years after Dragonfly. And I think it was following those formulas, right? Mm. So Mothman Prophecies featuring Richard Gere, and then Dragonfly featuring Kevin Costner. Oh. All three of these movies have these like classic, you know, kind of older leading men who tragically lose their wives and then begin to experience supernatural phenomena.
That is
and
so
I was
funny.
Obsessed with like these three in my head have been like this kind of unofficial trilogy for my entire, well, ever since they came out, basically.
Nothing like a dead wife to get a a straight white man's plot going.
I loved Mothman. I have never seen Dragonfly, so I like, but I love how you thought to put all those three together, because you're right, it's a total formula.
Yeah, and so I feel like the success of this is probably piggybacking off of those prior, probably semi-successes.
I don't know anything about Dragonfly. I'm not even 100% sure I've heard of it before. I have seen at least half of Mothman Prophecies.
I think I forced you to watch
it. Yeah, and I think I fell asleep partway through.
Oh.
Yeah, this movie I had very fond memories of having seen as a younger adult. First of all, like I alluded to when I announced my pick the last episode, Michael Keaton can do no wrong in my life. Oh. I absolutely love him and everything that he does. So like instantly I was like, oh, fuck yeah. White Noise is on Netflix. I love that movie. I love Michael Keaton. And Patrick just put out a comic called White Noise, his second ever comic, that I immediately, when you were talking about your comic and sort of plugging it a few weeks ago, I was thinking that sounds like a beloved movie from my teenage years, White Noise. And then it popped up on Netflix and I was like, we have to watch this.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I think I was vaguely aware of this movie, but it didn't even really occur to me when I titled the comic. There's also a Don DeLillo novel by the same title, which is about something else entirely. But yeah, my comic is about a literal white noise machine and bad things that come out of it. You can message me on any of our social media if you want to read that. But we're here to talk about the movie.
We are. Well,
can we just sing the praises of Michael Keaton for a minute?
Yes.
I love Michael Keaton. He is
me too.
Maybe, you know what? He might actually be my favorite living actor.
Wow.
Whoa.
He just can do literally anything. He's such a good comic actor. He has incredible presence in a dramatic role. And he just has that everyman kind of vibe that seems completely unforced, you know, like you have like Kevin Costner mm-hmm. as an example. He's good at putting on the everyman vibe, but it feels like a little bit more of a put on. Michael Keaton just feels so like completely natural, just like Joe Average in so many roles. And I love it. I love seeing him do his little like where he squinches his nose up and kind of like tucks his lower lip under and like sticks his teeth out when he's like really concentrating on something or kind of confused by something. It's great.
Okay. Michael Keaton has always unsettled me.
Oh.
No.
He has. Not because, and I think he's a great actor. There's something about his face that makes me uncomfortable and I can't tell you what it is. And two, the first thing I ever knew him as was Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, that was my first Michael Keaton. And anytime I see him as like a normal fucking person, I just am like, no, you're Beetlejuice and you're creepy.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
And why like, I can't see him as anything else.
Why is Beetlejuice wearing human makeup?
Right. And why does it look so abnormal?
Have you guys seen the movie Multiplicity?
No.
No.
Oh my God. 10 out of 10. Michael Keaton plays a guy who's like getting cloned, and every one of his clones is like getting dumber and dumber. It's really obviously like far-fetched, but it is comedy. I swear to you, some of the biggest laughs that I ever got as a kid were over Michael Keaton's comedy acting in that movie.
Okay.
It's totally absurd, but it is like, I mean, I guarantee you it still holds up. Like, it makes me want to go and find it and watch it.
I want to watch that right now.
I'm intrigued.
It is so good. And wasn't he a Batman? He was Batman, right?
Yeah.
He's the Batman.
Tim Burton's Batman.
He's my favorite. He's definitely my favorite Batman. Yeah.
Yeah.
God bless him. He only got two movies. He was robbed. And especially in the second one, he did not get enough to do. But that's often the peril of being Batman.
Well, so he wasn't a comedy actor at all in this. This was a very serious role for him.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was a dad. He was a doting father. He was a good co-parent with his ex, with his baby mama.
Yeah. Very nice co-parenting happening there.
Yeah. And like good dad. Like I was like, oh, I wish he were my dad when I was little.
Well, except when he gets obsessive and starts sending his kid away to like go stay with the family friend.
Yeah. Which is a huge drastic change. And you can see because he was such a good dad. And then he turns into like very distracted, grieving, spiraling dad.
Yeah.
When his wife disappears.
And he's great in this. Like, that's the best thing I can say about this movie is he's great in it. He gives it his all. Like, he gives everything his all. And especially, it's a bit of a challenging role because it's one of those movies where people are just sitting on computers listening to things and watching things. And he makes that about as compelling as it could be, which is still not the most compelling, but he's great.
He's a very grounding presence in a movie that like has a lot of, you know, ridiculous elements to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I never thought about that, Patrick, that there's not a lot of like material to work with. I hadn't thought about that before. People's just sitting around looking at computers. He really did a lot with it. 'Cause you know, he has that face, like it or not, he's super expressive. Mm-hmm. Super intense, and he's a fucking great actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like this was kind of one of the earlier, certainly not the earliest, but one of the earlier movies where, you know, you're just sitting looking at screens. Like, the technology in this is fairly archaic. You know, it is, I think at some point someone's like, oh, you should convert that file to an MP3 as if they're, you know, talking about like launching the space station or something. And yeah, I think it's definitely an earlier entry in the genre of sitting around looking at computer screens.
So I remember watching this movie and thinking, is that how, okay, so as a child, and Allison with a Y, I know you can relate to this, I think you can relate to this, I liked spooky, scary things from as early as I could remember.
Yeah, like, same.
Went to England with my, you know, with my grandparents to visit family and was like, take me to all the haunted castles and get me all the haunted books. And like, yes. I wanted to go to every haunted, you know, like legitimate haunted house in my area and explore them with my friends. And so EVPs were always something that was in the like vernacular of what I was into. Mm-hmm. But I remember watching this movie and being like, that seems like that could work, like using static white noise TVs to as like sort of a conduit for spirits. I don't know how accurate that, I think that still holds up. That's still like a tool that ghost hunters use to some degree.
EVPs, yes. Television static, no. That was definitely made up.
Or like radio static.
Radio static. So with the radio static, it's more like that would be like a spirit box.
Yes. Okay.
And when you're it's almost like what they came up with was sort of a hybrid for like the sounds, at least, not the visuals. The visuals, that was completely made up, but the sounds, it's a hybrid of EVPs, which is just recording and picking it up on the recorder, listening through it later, because it's oftentimes going to be things that your ear could not pick up, you know, ghostly voices. And then there's spirit boxes, which sounds more like what they were doing, except with spirit boxes, you're very rapidly flipping through radio stations, and supposedly, you know, spirits can communicate between the radio waves. So it kind of hybridizes those two concepts.
Right, the visuals on the TV was totally like over the top horror trope.
Yeah, I've never heard of that before in all of my obsession with learning about paranormal investigation.
Yeah.
Right, because there's a lot of auditory stuff, but at some point they must have been like, okay, we're not going to get through this entire movie just having like spooky sounds.
Yeah.
We got to have like his wife and other people kind of showing up in shadowy form on the TV and the static. Yeah.
With all the limits of mid-2000s.
CG.
CG, yeah.
This movie loves its jump scares.
Mm-hmm.
Because what else is it going to do to get you through listening to recordings on a computer for an hour and a half? And yeah, there was one too many. By which I mean probably one would have been one too many. So I guess then probably I actually mean like 25 too many moments where it's just like ooga booga and, you know, big like loud musical sting and you see something briefly scary on the computer screen. And that wore out on me the first time.
Yeah. Do you guys still jump at jump scares?
I do a little bit.
Rarely.
This is something weird that I've noticed about myself as I've started to watch so much horror that I don't really get scared anymore. Like, I don't feel scared anymore, but I don't jump at jump scares anymore. And I'm telling you, this is a big change because, like, even up to 5 years ago, I would plug my ears if I thought a jump scare was coming because I had to brace myself for it. And at some point, I don't know what changed in my brain. Like, I'm super intrigued by, like, the neuropathways of it all, but like I stopped not only plugging my ears, but I don't even get like jump. I don't jump.
Huh. Yeah, you're desensitized to it, and also the way they're delivered is so formulaic that a lot of the time you can tell that one is coming, and it's just like, okay, let's get it over with.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like you've seen enough to detect the setup, and the punchline has you know, no wait for you anymore. I mean, that's how it is for me, I think, at this point. Also, I mean, this does not apply to white noise, but so often, like, I hate the trope of the jump scare that turns out to be something completely innocuous, and then it's just like, you know, like the teenagers go to the cabin, and like the stoner, like, you know, opens the cabinet really loud, and they hit the horror movie sting, and then it's like, oh, Justin, don't do that, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Most of the jump scares in this movie was those very innocuous things, too.
Yeah.
That had nothing to do with the actual story.
Oh, really? Oh. To me, it was mostly, like, spooky-ooky things, or things that were supposed to, I guess, be spooky-ooky on, like, the recordings or the TV, as opposed to just, like, you know, something that was unrelated to the horror plot.
I think there were some environmental things that were intended to be jump scares because they were very loud and very sudden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Off topic slightly, I saw a post in the horror subreddit the other day that was somebody asked, like, what's your least favorite or most, like, overused or biggest annoyance, like, horror movie trope? And somebody commented exactly what you just said, Patrick, like a jump scare that turns out to be nothing.
Yep.
And then so many people piled on and were just like this one thing in this one movie, and everyone just upvoting the shit out of it. Like, I think that's a pretty common thing for people, horror lovers, to be really fucking annoyed by.
Yeah, I mean, it's especially like such a first act trope, you know. I think it's just like, gotta keep the teens' butts in their seats until like the actual spooky stuff starts. So let's just do, you know, dumb shit. Anyways, that really doesn't have much of anything to do with white noise. It's just me bitching about a pet peeve.
Would you guys call this movie scary?
I would call it atmospheric.
Yeah, that's a good
word. It has some atmosphere. I'll give it that. I didn't find it particularly spooky. I think the premise has some potential. You know, trying to find out what happened to this guy's dead wife through this kind of unconventional means. Where it lost me was just the kind of muddled, what Allison with a Y was just talking about, with this kind of muddle of like EVPs, you know, sound recordings, which feels a little more plausible and a little more genuinely spooky. And then just like when people start showing up in the TV static, it feels silly and like they're reaching for something to kind of hold this together a little bit more. And that definitely lost me. And then also just like it gets weirdly bogged down in them just investigating other people's cases, because Michael Keaton's character ends up making friends with someone else who lost a loved one, and you know, they start investigating various people's cases together, and that does end up being connected to what else is going on with Michael Keaton's wife in the end. We'll get into that in the spoiler room, but I don't know, it was just, it felt like such a detour from the main thing I was concerned about, which was, you know, the fate of his wife. And then when the wife's final fate was revealed, the ending of this was incredibly silly to me. So, like, the mystery was compelling, and this method of investigating it was compelling, but it kind of whiffed on that whole setup for me. What did you think? Was it spooky? Was it spooky to you in 2005, and was it spooky to you upon revisiting 20 years later?
I'm certain that it was spooky to me in 2005. I wasn't as seasoned a horror watcher, movie watcher. Like I said, jump scares used to make me jump. And I think this is getting into like, I love ghosty things. I love ghost stories. So this was very much like my flavor of horror. It wasn't, I was trying to look to rewatch this through the vantage point of like, who would like this movie? Like, you know, I like my mild, medium, hot salsa rating. Like, this is a good mild salsa horror movie.
Yeah.
But I did feel like my body was tense. Like, in the third act, there was a really great deal of tension when he was kind of deep in his investigating and it was all sort of coming to a head. And there were a couple moments where I was like, this is scary. This would maybe be scary even for like a mild salsa horror movie. There were just a couple of, I guess, tense moments where, I don't know, I think I could see how someone could be a little scared, but I wasn't, because I'm tough.
Yeah, I thought it was good at like building up tension. Mm. I don't know if like the releases were very satisfying.
Mm.
But I did like the tension building in this. It was very much of that genre of 2000s, like kind of more suspense horror.
Like thriller, psychological thriller-ish.
Yeah. Yeah. It very much followed, I think, a lot of those kind of formulas. And what worked about those that, you know, we ended up getting away from for a while and just going like the pure like gore shock route. And that's when I kind of got out of a lot of popular horror films.
Yeah, I can't think of a lot of current, like, modern horror that's like this. Yeah. Seems like we kind of abandoned it.
Yeah, it was very much of a time once, I think particularly once, like, Hostel came out, that kind of changed.
Hostel and Saw.
Hostel and Saw really changed horror for a long time, mm-hmm. and we got away from this kind of quieter, more atmospheric thriller suspense horror, which is what I prefer, even if this movie wasn't, like, I think the best version of that. I tend to prefer that, obviously, over gore.
Gave you nostalgia for a certain era.
Different approach.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it reminded me strongly of The Sixth Sense.
Yes.
Which came out, you know, I think just a few years before. And I would not have been surprised if it turned out that Michael Keaton had actually been dead himself the whole time, you know, right. Something along those lines. And I think it was going for that level of twist toward the end, did not deliver on it, in my opinion. But it has that same like kind of chilly energy to it. It's more cerebral than anything for the most part. Certainly has more jump scares in it than I remember The Sixth Sense having. But it made me want to rewatch The Sixth Sense, actually, which I haven't seen in quite a while.
Oh, I mean, also,
like, The Ring kind of fits into that genre, too, you know? Weird investigations, a little more psychological, a little more atmospheric than it's just relying on shock value. I don't know. I kind of like this, like, little canon of, like, early, mid-aughts horror that we're kind of piecing together here.
It's like it's cozy.
I was like, just gonna say that.
Were you really?
Yes, I was just gonna say it's like cozy horror.
Cozy in its chilliness.
Funny. Yeah, it's cozy. It's familiar. It's like a it's a cozy horror. That is weird. Why?
They're like good movies to put on. You don't want anything like too intense. You want to put on some candles. You want to like chill under a blanket, drink a hot beverage.
Yeah.
You know, not be disgusted. Just have something kind of like make you look in the dark corners of your home and be like, what's going on there?
Yeah, it's cozy.
It's like wrapping up in a big ice cold blanket.
I feel like only we would use the word cozy to describe horror. That's really funny.
Yeah, not necessarily movies I would recommend for people looking for cozy movies.
But yeah, not that cozy to me. Not that kind of cozy.
I also really want to rewatch The Ring now.
The Ring is a banger. We did that for the show a few years ago, and it holds up like a motherfucker.
Oh, great.
I think The Ring started, like you guys talked about Hostel and Saw being like a new iteration of horror. I think The Ring was the first movie that I felt like, the first horror movie that I watched that I felt like I was cursed after, where you feel like, you know, like same with like Blair Witch, where you're just like, I wasn't supposed to see that. And like, I know it was just a movie, but what if it's not?
Yes.
Absolutely.
So we talked a ton about Michael Keaton's performances, but I would be so remiss if I didn't mention, I think all of the actors in this movie were great. Like there were a couple female actresses that came up. Some had bigger parts than others. Obviously, Michael Keaton's wife, who we don't really get to know that well because she dies or she mysteriously vanishes and then it turns out that she died. But I loved all of the female actresses in this movie. And I don't know them from really anywhere, but I kind of know them from somewhere. It's like one of those things where you're like, I've seen her in something and she's great, but I don't know. I got a really strong, like, I had like a really strong affinity after I was watching this for like the female roles in this movie.
So the woman who plays Sarah, who is the person that Michael Keaton's character meets, who had also kind of become obsessed with the white noise because she had lost her fiance. She's played by Deborah Kara Unger. And she, I was like, I know her. What do I know her from? Cronenberg's Crash.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Shit. I haven't seen that in so long. I wouldn't remember who the hell she was in it, but
that movie is seared into my brain.
Oh, in a good way.
Oh, you gotta see it.
Okay.
It's a time.
Oh yeah.
I think you could put it in the genre.
Yeah, I mean, it's David Cronenberg back when he made almost exclusively body horror, and it's based on a J.G. Ballard novel about people who get off sexually on car crashes.
Yeah. Oh, God. Oh, God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
No.
No.
Thank God. I mean, well, I'm sure there's a few people I don't think it's a well-documented fetish or anything.
I'll have to look into that. Keegan Connor was the girl who played the medium in this movie, and she was in Final Destination 2. She's got that face that you just are like, that girl's been in something. Those big eyes. Yeah. And she does. She's got some horror stuff under her belt.
I knew her from the show Once Upon a Time. She played the fairy godmother in that show, and I was obsessed with like the first few seasons of it.
I do want to go back to you mentioned the actor who played Michael Keaton's character's wife, and I agree, she did a nice job, given that she has like a scene before she disappears. And I give her and Keaton and their chemistry together incredible credit for building what felt like a credible relationship, and two characters who I liked together. And I liked them so much, and it was established so quickly that even knowing nothing about the premise of this, I was like, oh, this woman is going to die real soon. Like, they cannot have this good of a relationship established this quickly and her not be out of the picture real fucking fast. But she and he together did a really nice job of establishing a sense of a loving relationship. That like was chemistry. Going to devastate him when she disappeared.
Great chemistry.
Yeah, truly. And then the guy who played Raymond Price is Ian McNeice, who, funny enough, I just looked at his IMDb, and where I remember him from is fucking Ace Ventura: When Nature Calls.
Wow.
Which was on repeat in my teenage years.
That's so funny.
Wow.
But I think he's cast really well as this, like, kind of sturdy, like, stranger, and at first it seems like he's got really ill intentions, but then he wins him over and he ends up helping him, and I just feel like that's such an archetype, and I thought it was cast perfectly. I don't know, I feel like Ian McNeice just has this face that you're like, he's got a kind face and he's honest and he's earnest, and yes, I could see why we'd be skeptical at first, but I'm totally bought in. I trust him immediately. Like, it just worked.
He plays a good everyman, too. Mm-hmm. You know, he feels like this just sort of disheveled guy who seems credible almost immediately. Just as, like, not necessarily in the sense of, like, his EVP bullshit being credible, but just he seems like a credible actual person.
Yeah.
From Square One.
Trustworthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, disarming in a way.
Yeah.
You know, you just don't detect any ill intentions from him.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, some decent performances in this.
What else do we have? Is there anything else before we spoil this and rate it?
Oh, yeah. So I discovered that there's a sequel to this. This movie, generally not critically well received. The sequel is apparently... consensus is it's way better. Whoa. And it stars, of all people, my boy, my crush, Nathan Fillion.
Shut up.
And also Katie Sackhoff, who's been in a million things. She rules too. But yeah, I am very curious to see that. I mean, if it was one of these, if it was like an American Psycho 2 situation, like Mila Kunis in American Psycho 2 intrigues me, but it's never been enough to draw me in because I hear the sequel is absolute dog shit. But between Nathan Fillion and Katie Sackhoff, and apparently it's actually good, I'm like, I need to see White Noise 2, which there's a subtitle. There's a colon. White Noise, colon, The Light.
The Light.
And they don't know what that means.
Quick turnaround, 2005 to 2007 sequel.
Cranking them out. Also released in January.
Interesting. Well, let's review this thing.
Yeah.
Allison with a Y. Would you view, cue, or screw White Noise featuring Michael Keaton?
I'm going to give it a cue it. Okay, this is not a phenomenal film. It's not going to knock your socks off. But I think it's a fine film to put on if you want to have a cozy, chilly watch. You don't have to pay super, super, super close attention to it. You know, I would consider this good, some mild salsa horror for sure. It's not. I mean, okay. I remember some of the things being not great from when I was younger, that still I'm like, okay, yeah, I did remember that not being so great. But I don't have it in my heart to give this a screw it because there's too much nostalgia for this era, and I just have such an appreciation for like slower, moodier, less graphic and more cerebral horror, and I want more of that again.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick, what do you give this one? View it, cue it, or screw it?
Absolute view it to Michael Keaton's performance, of course, as in everything. I don't know. I think I gotta go screw it on this one. I just found it quite dull. I like moody, I like cerebral, I like slower paced, but this was, I don't know. It just felt like it lost the thread, lost the plot a little bit to me. As I said before, it goes off into these other investigations. And then the resolution to the central mystery was, to me, disappointing as fuck and, in fact, pretty silly. And just, you know, if you're going to have a look at things on computers movie, it better be real compelling. And like I said before, I think the jump scares are telling of the fact that they knew they didn't have a lot going for them with that. So yeah, it didn't do much for me. I got to screw it. Allison with an I.
Oh man. I was a view it right up until the end. And we'll talk about that scene that I'm sure we all are in agreement that is just was a flop. But I felt so much nostalgia watching this movie, like you said, why this generated like so many good feelings of, we talked about like a time that existed of these types of horror movies that I absolutely loved. And I think coming into loving horror as a teenager, I kind of needed this genre, like this subgenre as like a lubricant into some of the harder stuff that was to come, because it was not... It's mild salsa, right? So, like, I mean, if I were going to create a should watch list of spooky season movies for my teenage daughter and her friends, this would be somewhere in the top, like, 50. But it's not in the top 10. It's not in the top 5. And granted, they can do medium salsa, even hot salsa. But, like, I really love what this film meant to me at this time in my life. And, again, Michael Keaton, all the flowers. The end, I was just like, oh God, I forgot about that. Yeah. And it was just,
I did not.
I truly it was did.
Just as bad as I remembered.
And it was, there was literally a moment where my brain went from a view it to a cue it. And I was like, God damn it. So no hate to this movie. Just, you know, I think horror's come such a long way that if we're going to recommend a movie to our friends, our listeners, it's got to be a little better than this.
You know, piggybacking off of that, I have to say, like, I think part of why I gave it a cue it instead of a screw it was because I actually was surprised by how much I did enjoy certain elements of this movie, because I mostly remembered that ending and like being like, really?
Yeah.
So I think like the other stuff that like, you know, gave me those good kind of nostalgic feelings, actually pleasantly surprised me because I thought it was all going to be pretty schlocky.
They saved, I love that. They saved you.
Yeah. Earlier in the movie kind of saved it for me.
I love that we're on the same page about this ending. I thought maybe one of you might be into it, but I'm looking forward to discussing it because it was fucking ridiculous.
It was. And it was doing well up until then. It was doing fine.
Also, Allison with an I, I just have to give you your flowers for like the best mixed metaphor that I've heard this year so far, which is lubricant and mild salsa.
Oh.
There's a moment where like the mild salsa felt like it was the lubricant.
Ew.
And no one wants that. No one needs that.
No one wants that. That was not my intention, folks. Would not recommend.
Better than the hot salsa.
Although I have heard some stories about how to use salsa, but
oh!
In a different way. It's in a different way.
That's a different podcast, folks.
Yeah, oh. That's not this. Let's keep this one family friendly. Just kidding. Well, where are we going? Where's the spoiler what today?
Spoiler abandoned warehouse?
Yeah.
Mm.
Spoiler Michael Keaton's bedroom with 25 tape TVs? No. Joke.
I'm interested. I'll bring the mild salsa.
Oh my God.
But while I run to the store for a little pace, I'll remind you to visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com, where we've got a list of all our episodes, as well as a link to our merch store, where you can get shirts and coffee mugs and all kinds of other goodies with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on them. And we'd also love for you to come hang out with us on social media.
You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amoncast, EHMONCAST, and TikTok @ Amon Podcast. And then you can also find the link to our Discord in our show notes. And on our Discord, you can come join us to chat about the stuff we've been watching. Share with us other stuff you've been watching or reading or listening to. Hop in on our book club that our beloved fan Bree / moderator of our Discord.
Mm-hmm. Super yep. Moderator, in fact.
Yeah, it's a lovely little community. Join us there.
And please leave us a review anywhere you listen to your podcasts. We love to hear from you. We haven't had a review in a while, I don't think.
Yeah, it has been a while. Y'all slacking.
Yeah. Give us a
Get
review.
Get it together.
Get your shit together.
We'll send you a t-shirt.
No, we won't.
I wouldn't go that far. We're going to have Just to kidding. Spend 15 whole dollars on that.
Cut that.
No, we'll leave it in so everyone knows how fucking cheap I am.
All right, guys. We'll see you in the spoiler abandoned warehouse. All right, we're here in the spoiler abandoned bear...
the bear house.
the abandoned bear house. Woo!
That's Midsommar.
Whoa, that is Midsommar. All right, guys. Stop it.
Let's just leave all of that.
Oh, God.
No, we're here. We're back in the spoiler abandoned warehouse to spoil all things white noise related. And what are the big spoilers here?
Raymond dies mysteriously.
Raymond is murdered by something.
Something. Like Jonathan, Michael Keaton, he gets a call from Raymond. He's like, you got to come over right now. Something big is happening. He goes over there, finds Raymond just like fucking crushed by TVs.
Having maybe? got.
Yeah, got by a ghost.
By a ghost. got by a ghost.
Yeah, he's like bleeding from the mouth and his eyes are wide open.
Eyes wide open.
Yeah. We don't
Scary
really ever.
Stuff.
That's a plot hole. We don't get any explanation as to how he dies or why. I guess we know why, but. Yeah,
that's true. That never is explained, really. I mean, I guess we can kind of infer that he is attacked by the same shit that winds up, yeah, getting Michael Keaton, which we're about to get to. But it's never really directly stated.
Yeah. So basically, Michael Keaton and his new friend, Sarah, they end up realizing that all of these people who are either like wound up dead or missing, they had been, their names had been coming up in like the logs, or they had been going to Raymond.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had been like going to Raymond, and then later they were winding up dead
or missing.
So they're like, oh my God, or missing. And they're like, it's all connected.
Which also doesn't make sense. So they were going to Raymond to hear about their loved ones who he was helping contact through the white noise. And then they ended up targeted by an entity, which is sort of like Final Destination-y in a way, but that we don't ever really understand why that happened. I don't feel like we needed to, but it was a plot hole now enforced in hindsight.
I mean, frankly, any of the antagonists, whether it's the paranormal one or the very real life one who turns up in the end, don't make a lot of fucking sense.
Yeah.
No, there's no explanation, really, of the intent behind these malevolent spirits.
Which we keep seeing as three shadowy figures all standing together on the TV. You can never see a face. It's just like the vague shape of like a human torso and head.
Yeah. Literally three shadow figures.
Yeah.
So Jonathan gets the torch passed to him and he starts obsessively tracking these EVPs himself and totally spirals into complete oblivion, neglects his son. But he starts seeing images come up on the TV that are crime scenes or scenes of dismay or whatever. And then ends up rescuing a couple of people that are not dead, which was a twist because I don't think Raymond had done any of that.
No.
Yeah, he's getting like, yeah, premonition type EVPs that allow him to save a couple of people before they die.
And so then he basically is like, this is my purpose. Like, this is the, like, and Anna is helping me from the other side.
Right. His wife.
To save these people.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just becomes like his whole personality, his entire life.
Right.
Which is all fine. But again, it feels like kind of a detour. It's like, honestly, in the end, why is he getting these kind of like flash forwards? It feels like padding. Like there are a few of these little investigations and it just feels like padding out a movie that's already pretty fucking short anyway.
Yeah, I guess it's implied that Michael Keaton's character has this advantage that Raymond didn't have to save people before they died, in that his dead wife was helping him from the other side. So Raymond didn't have that advantage or whatever.
True.
Because his son died and was like, fuck you.
Yeah, I ain't telling you shit.
Yeah, I'm out of here.
So yeah, Jonathan tracks a missing woman.
Saves a baby.
Saves a baby from a car wreck.
And then I think the weirdest part of all of that is that he ends up putting like two and two together that some of these people, their EVPs are coming through like days before they're actually dead.
Right.
Which is really weird.
And that's a twist, right? That's supposed to have been a twist because Raymond was presumably just dealing with them in the afterlife, whereas now Jonathan has the ability to see something that's going to happen, like Final Destination-esque again. Like, it reminded me a little bit of that a couple of times.
Yeah, and I was really, I don't know, from, I sometimes I get too bogged down in the mechanics, but I was like, how does that even fucking work? How do you get EVPs from future dead people?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I think you're approaching it a little more from like, I mean, because you've studied some EVPs in real life, and you're approaching it, I think, from a little bit more of like an actual practical, like real world standpoint. And I'm also approaching it from like just on a plot level, like why or how.
Yeah.
and it's never answered.
Yeah.
Well, and it's odd. And it's not like these people are like old and dying, so they're like, you could justify that they're emitting some sort of like, you know, death is approaching them. It's like there's an accident, right? Or like kidnapping. Didn't make sense.
No,
I didn't need it to, because again, nostalgia, but somebody watching this for the first time would probably be like, that's fucking plot hole galore.
yeah, a lot of plot holes.
The spooks get to Sarah. They like make her jump off a building, which you think is gonna kill her, and it doesn't.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe that was the biggest twist was her not dying.
Honestly. Yeah.
Medically impossible. And then she's sort of acting as a conduit while she's in the hospital, like channeling the messaging that's going on with Jonathan, who has now tracked a missing woman to an abandoned warehouse.
A spoiler abandoned warehouse.
A spoiler abandoned warehouse. This warehouse, first of all, it reminded me of an abandoned warehouse in one of the Thor movies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I was like, is this shot in the same fucking place? Because it looks like the same place.
The one where they keep dropping the ball down and it loops back up.
Yes.
Yeah. The worst Thor movie.
Yeah.
Just Thor recycling set pieces.
Yeah, basically.
And wow, what a, yeah. As soon as like he stepped foot in that, I was like, this is the part that I remember.
Yeah, it all fell apart. Because it turns out Anna's been urging him to go find this missing woman who's very publicly missing. There's a reward, et cetera, whatever. And she's being held by a real life scary person who Michael Keaton had like a very brief encounter with.
Very brief is an understatement. Yeah.
Yeah.
Earlier in his movie, he's an architect. He was in a building that was being built, and this guy was a construction worker just for 2 seconds. We saw him.
It is so weird. Like, this flashback is presented in the same way that you flashback when you're revealing a fucking crazy ass twist. But in this case, it's about a character who showed up for literally 1 second, who has no actual connection to anyone else in the movie. Such a strange choice.
Bizarre. You didn't need to have him shown previously at all.
No.
There's no purpose to that.
No. It's so odd. But yeah, he's just been like killing people.
Just a psycho killer.
And he tortured and killed Anna, right? Michael Keaton's wife, Jonathan's wife.
Yeah, we find out that she didn't just slip and fall into the water. She was kidnapped by this dude and he murdered her.
Which is genuinely terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Like, scary people at doing the behest, scary things is the worst.
Yeah. He's murdering people at the behest of this trio of, I don't know, what, Casper's fucking uncles?
Yeah, these fucking shadow guys who we've been seeing the whole movie, and it's been like, okay, who are these? There has to be some significance to them. No, they're disconnected. They're not connected to anything. There's no explanation for who they are. And then all of a sudden, they come down from the roof of the warehouse and attack Michael Keaton.
Stupid way.
Yeah.
Just a tornado of bad CGI ghosts.
Yeah, ghost tornado.
Ghost tornado.
Ghost NATO.
I was so bummed.
Baffling.
I was so bummed when they did that. Because when I saw the three guys, I was like, oh, I know that this is a climax somewhere. This happens, this crescendo somewhere. And I was like, really wanted them to be like three bad cops or like aliens, like gray men, like aliens. I was like, please be aliens.
Or like literally anything that made any kind of sense, like any explanation other than just like three random ghosts who are just like bad because they're bad, I guess.
Who are just bored and like antagonizing people and trying to get this one dude to kill people. Like, what? Why? Who are you?
Yeah.
What's your deal?
And they
what's the deal with ghosts?
What's the deal with ghosts? And like, so presumably, okay, so the construction worker serial killer dude was influenced by the ghosts to break Anna's legs and kill her, right?
Yes.
But the ghosts are also perfectly capable of breaking legs on their own because then they basically cause the same injuries to happen to Michael Keaton and kill him that happened to his wife and killed her. So it raises the question of, like, why did they need to act through, like, a flesh and blood person in the first place if they can just ghost NATO people and achieve their ends?
Great question.
I don't know. It's a mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end is rough, but also kind of a little entertaining in how fucking ridiculous it is.
No, I was so disappointed.
It's something.
I think I like audibly like cackled when the ghosts showed up in their in their Ghost NATO form.
And I think we both cackled at the actual ending. So we wind up at Michael Keaton's funeral. His kid is in the car and the radio's on. And it does that horror movie radio thing where the stations change on their own. And then we hear a little bit of Michael Keaton's voice through the radio saying, like, "I'm sorry, Mikey," or something like that.
"I'm sorry, buddy."
And the final note is Sarah is hanging out in the cemetery and sees some very spooky wind. The trees move really fast and she's like, "Huh." And then we just see a shot of like Michael Keaton and his wife on TV credits.
Yeah. It's so weird.
I love in the notes that you write for the pod, Sarah gets freaked out by the wind. It's the last note.
That's the final spoiler.
Honestly, during that like last little bit there, I was like, are they going to start hearing voices on the wind or the rustling of the leaves? Is that where this is going?
It's evolved.
It's evolved.
I mean, honestly, this... the ending fucks up so much of this for me. Like, there's a lot of it that I did find kind of dull prior to that. But you could have salvaged that. It hadn't lost enough goodwill. You know, this is not Secrets in the Hot Spring. It hadn't ruined my brain prior where you couldn't have salvaged it with a decent ending.
Yeah, agreed.
But it just whiffs so hard on every element of this ending. It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just falls under like the classic horror curse where it can't live up to what it tried to establish earlier in the film. Like, they just have to kind of jump the shark or jump the Ghost NATO. Yeah. You know?
Damn.
Yeah. Well, it'll hold a special place in our heart. Cozy horror.
I know. Mm-hmm. I still don't think it's a waste of time.
Nah. It's got a place. It's got a place in the world.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, anything else before we wrap up the discussion on White Noise?
I don't think so.
What are we watching next week? Is it Allison? Your pick, right?
It is my pick, yes. My choice is Cobweb.
Ooh, I think I've seen that movie title somewhere.
So I'm intrigued. I've never heard of it. It's from 2023, and Lizzie Kaplan is in it.
Oh, I like her. Okay.
So here's a little quick Netflix blurb. Terrified by the eerie noises inside his bedroom walls, an isolated young boy suspects that his parents are concealing an unspeakable secret. And that just sounds kind of spooky. Sounds like my vibe.
Yeah.
And also Lizzie Kaplan.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a good little cobweb to kick off October.
Yeah, it feels appropriate for spooky month.
Yeah.
I have to say there's a gigantic cobweb on my mailbox with a even more gigantic spider that Ella and I are just like caring for.
Oh.
Oh, there's kind of one at our house too.
Oh yeah, you named it.
Uh-huh.
Lydia.
I named her. Yeah, I named her Lydia.
I think I need to relocate it because it's starting to freak me out. And probably the mailman too. It's like you have to really get real close to it to put the mail in the mailbox. But
dude, bring her inside.
No.
Make her a little spot on the couch and she can watch Cobweb with you.
No.
Yeah.
I draw the line. No? That's where I draw the line. She's a big girl.
Oh,
I'm just gonna move her. I think it's okay to move her. Just destroy her web. Sorry. She can move herself.
Sad.
Anyway, catch us next week for Cobweb.
Yeah. Until then, go to the fucking website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. Go to the social media at AmonCast, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube, at Amon Podcast, on TikTok. See the Discord. It's in the show notes. Leave us a fucking review. That's it.
Hell yeah.
We'll see you next week for the kickoff of spooky season. For Every Horror Movie on Netflix, I am one of your hosts, Allison with an I.
I'm Patrick.
And I'm Allison with a Y.
Bye.
See ya.